Chapter 32. Speaking to the Unborn. It is understandable that a huge range of myths from all over the ancient world should describe geological catastrophes in graphic detail. Mankind survived the horror of the last ice age, and the most plausible source for our enduring traditions of flooding and freezing, massive volcanism, and devastating earthquakes is in the tumultuous upheavals unleashed during the Great Meltdown of 15,000 to 8,000 BC. The final retreat of the ice sheets and the consequent 300 to 400-foot rise in global sea levels took place only a few thousand years before the beginning of the historical period. It is therefore not surprising that all our early civilizations should have retained vivid memories of the vast cataclysms that had terrified their forefathers. Much harder to explain is the peculiar but distinctive way the myths of cataclysm seem to bear the intelligent imprint of a guiding hand. Indeed, the degree of convergence between such ancient stories is frequently remarkable enough to raise the suspicion that they must all have been written by the same author. Could that author have had anything to do with the wondrous deity or superhuman spoken of in so many of the myths we have reviewed, who appears immediately after the world has been shattered by a horrifying geological catastrophe and brings comfort and the gifts of civilization to the shocked and demoralized survivors? White and bearded, Osiris is the Egyptian manifestation of this universal figure, and it may not be an accident that one of the first acts he is remembered for in myth is the abolition of cannibalism among the primitive inhabitants of the Nile Valley. Viracocha, in South America, was said to have begun his civilizing mission immediately after a great flood. Quetzalcoatl, the discoverer of maize, brought the benefits of crops, mathematics, astronomy, and a refined culture to Mexico after the fourth sun had been overwhelmed by a destroying deluge. Could these strange myths contain a record of encounters between scattered Paleolithic tribes who had survived the last ice age and an as yet unidentified high civilization which passed through the same epoch? And could the myths be attempts to communicate? A message in the bottle of time. Of all the other stupendous inventions, Galileo once remarked, what sublimity of mind must have been his, who conceived how to communicate his most secret thoughts to any other person, though very distant either in time or place, speaking with those who are in the Indies, speaking to those who are not yet born, nor shall be this 1,000 or 10,000 years, and with no greater difficulty than the various arrangements of 24 little signs on paper. Let this be the seal of all the admirable inventions of men. If the precessional message, identified by scholars like Santillana, von Deschend, and Jane Sellers, is indeed a deliberate attempt at communication by some lost civilization of antiquity, how come it wasn't just written down and left for us to find? Wouldn't that have been easier than encoding it in myths? Perhaps. Nevertheless, suppose that whatever the message was written on got destroyed or worn away after many thousands of years. Or suppose that the language in which it was inscribed was later forgotten utterly, like the enigmatic Indus Valley script, which has been studied closely for more than half a century, but which has so far resisted all attempts at decoding. It must be obvious that in such circumstances, a written legacy to the future would be of no value at all, because nobody would be able to make sense of it. What one would look for, therefore, would be a universal language, the kind of language that would be comprehensible to any technologically advanced society in any epoch, even 1,000 or 10,000 years into the future. Such languages are few and far between, but mathematics is one of them, and the city of Teotihuacan may be the calling card of a lost civilization written in the eternal language of mathematics. Geodetic data, related to the exact positioning of fixed geographical points and to the shape and size of the Earth, would also remain valid and recognizable for tens of thousands of years, and might be most conveniently expressed by means of cartography or in the construction of giant geodetic monuments like the Great Pyramid of Egypt, as we shall see. Another constant in our solar system is the language of time, the great but regular intervals of time calibrated by the inchworm creep of precessional motion. Now, or 10,000 years in the future, a message that prints out numbers like 72 or 2160 or 4,320 or 25,920 should be instantly intelligible to any civilization that has evolved a modest talent for mathematics and the ability to detect and measure the almost imperceptible reverse wobble that the sun appears to make along the ecliptic against the background of the fixed stars, 1 degree in 71.6 years, 30 degrees in 2,148 years, and so on. The sense that a correlation exists is strengthened by something else. It is neither as firm nor as definite as the number of syllables in the Rig Veda. Nevertheless, it feels relevant. Through powerful stylistic links and shared symbolism, myths to do with global cataclysms and with precession of the equinoxes quite frequently intermesh. A detailed interconnectedness exists between these two categories of tradition, both of which additionally bear what appear to be the recognizable fingerprints of a conscious design. Quite naturally, therefore, one is prompted to discover whether there might not be an important connection between precession of the equinoxes and global catastrophes. Mill of Pain. Although several different mechanisms of an astronomical and geological nature seem to be involved, and although not all of these are fully understood, the fact is that the cycle of precession does correlate very strongly with the onset and demise of ice ages. Several trigger factors must coincide, which is why not every shift from one astronomical age to another is implicated. Nevertheless, it is accepted that precession does have an impact on both glaciation and deglaciation at widely separated intervals. The knowledge that it does so has only been established by our own science since the late 1970s, yet the evidence of the myths suggests that the same level of knowledge might have been possessed by an as yet unidentified civilization in the depths of the last ice age. The clear suggestion we may be meant to grasp is that the terrible cataclysms of flood and fire and ice which the myths describe were in some way causally connected to the ponderous movements of the celestial coordinates through the great cycle of the zodiac. In the words of Santillana and von Deschend, it was not a foreign idea to the ancients that the mills of the gods grind slowly and that the result is usually pain. Three principal factors, all of which we have met before, are now known to be deeply implicated in the onset and retreat of ice ages, together, of course, with the diverse cataclysms that ensue from sudden freezes and thaws. These factors all have to do with variations in the Earth's orbital geometry. They are, one, the obliquity of the ecliptic, that is, the angle of tilt of the planet's axis of rotation, which is also the angle between the celestial equator and the ecliptic. This, as we have seen, varies over immensely long periods of time between 22.1 degrees, the closest point that the axis reaches to the vertical, and 24.5 degrees, the furthest it falls away from the vertical. Two, the eccentricity of the orbit, that is, whether the Earth's elliptical path around the Sun is more or less elongated in any given epoch. Three, axial precession, which causes the four cardinal points on the Earth's orbit, the two equinoxes and the winter and summer solstices, to creep backwards very, very slowly around the orbital path. We are dipping our toes into the waters of a technical and specialized scientific discipline here, one largely outside the scope of this book. Readers seeking detailed information are referred to the multidisciplinary work of the U.S. National Science Foundation's CLIMAP project, and to a keynote paper by Professors J.D. Hayes and John Imbrie entitled Variations in the Earth's Orbit, Pacemaker of the Ice Ages. Briefly, what Hayes and Imbrie and others have proved is that the onset of ice ages can be predicted when the following evil and inauspicious conjunctions of celestial cycles occur. A. Maximum eccentricity, which takes the Earth millions of miles further away from the Sun at aphelion, the extremity of its orbit, than is normal. B. Minimum obliquity, which means that the Earth's axis, and consequently the north and south poles, stand much closer to the vertical than is normal. And 3. Precession of the equinoxes, which, as the great cycle continues, eventually causes winter in one hemisphere or the other to set in when the Earth is at perihelion, its closest point to the Sun. This in turn means that summer occurs at aphelion and is thus relatively cold, so that ice laid down in winter fails to melt during the following summer, and a remorseless build-up of glacial conditions occurs. Leveraged by the changing geometry of the orbit, global insolation, the differing amounts and intensity of sunlight received at various latitudes in any given epoch, can thus be an important trigger for ice ages. Is it possible that the ancient mythmakers were trying to warn us of great danger when they so intricately linked the pain of global cataclysms to the slow grinding of the mill of heaven? This is a question we will return to in due course, but meanwhile, it's enough to observe that by identifying the significant effects of orbital geometry on the planet's climate and well-being, and by combining this information with precise measurements of the rate of precessional motion, the unknown scientists of an unrecognized civilization seem to have found a way to catch our attention, to bridge the chasm of the ages, and to communicate with us directly. Whether or not we listen to what they have to say is, of course, entirely up to us.